my mind, you just wake up and go rake.
It's starting to get weird, right? With Houston, worst record in Major League Baseball. That's what that front office inherited. In Baltimore, worst record in Major League Baseball. That's what Michael Elias and that front office inherited. In Houston, third lowest payroll in Major League Baseball the first season. In Baltimore, third lowest payroll in Major League Baseball, Elias's first season. And finally, they made the playoffs 4 years after the front office took over. In Houston, in Baltimore, they made the playoffs 5 seasons, including that COVID year after Mike Elias took over.
Follow at Wake and Rake Pod on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok.
I'm kind of a big deal.
What up, baby? Episode 116, Wake and Rake Podcast. Danny Vietti bringing you all the action. Been a few weeks. It's the first time I've been home in, oh gosh, 3-4 weeks. Let's start it out with New York for the first round of March Madness. Then we went out to Phoenix for the Final Four a couple weeks after that. It's last week, where was I? Florida. I was golfing with Middlebrooks, actually. And if you're wondering how the scores turned out, let's just say that mine would have played very, very well in bowling, my score. Willie's would play well, in golf. I think he was a par 4, 320 yards, 340 yards, something like that. And it was a bend around a pond. We were playing at Adios Golf Club in just outside of Fort Lauderdale. Willie decides to flex a little bit, brings out a 3-iron. Not only does he get it across the water, about 280 yards with a 3-iron, but he also hits a draw. And as I said, it kind of funnels dogleg left. It kind of funnels into the hole to the left side. And yeah, I think Willie shot a 73 on the day. So let's just say he kicked my ass and he kicked all of our asses on the golf course. And but a big thank you to Willie and Jenny for setting that all up. I know they're listening. I'm solo today, people. As I mentioned on the previous podcast, Wake and Rake went through a little bit of a transition period, which means you're going to be hearing a lot of my voice. It's going to be more informative, more than it is back and forth banter between me and Willie. All right. Today's episode, we're focused on the Baltimore Orioles. They are the first place American League East team. They had the best record in the American League a season ago. And it's really shocking when you consider they were the worst team in baseball just a few seasons ago. So today's episode is going to focus on how the Baltimore Orioles went from having the worst record in baseball just 3 years ago to all of a sudden now having a championship window that looks like it could exceed the next decade. How did that happen? How did they build through the draft? How did they make international signings? And how much does it reminisce what the Houston Astros did back in the early 2010s, which then later evolved into an American League dynasty in Houston? We'll dive deeper. But first, the best thing I saw over these last couple weeks, I want to hit on this first before diving into Baltimore. Cam Boozer, relief pitcher for the Boston Red Sox. Maybe you've heard the story already, maybe you haven't, but there's some details that came in a little bit later after he made his MLB debut that I think adds even more to the narrative and to the incredibleness of the story. So Cam Boozer, relief pitcher, left-handed arm for the Boston Red Sox, but it took him a while to get up to Boston and to make his MLB debut. Boozer originally committed to Oregon State out of high school. However, as a freshman, he underwent Tommy John surgery. Season was done. And after that, kind of lost his spot and wound up transferring to Central Arizona Junior College. So he decided to go the JC route. He went undrafted in 2013 out of Central Arizona JC, and he signed with the Minnesota Twins as an undrafted free agent. A number of different obstacles was thrown this guy's way. He had labrum surgery. He actually broke his spine after being hit by a car while riding a bike. Yeah. He was suspended 50 games for testing positive for marijuana, which now is legal in Major League Baseball. Boozer quit baseball entirely in 2017 after never advancing past single A. He returned home to Seattle to work as a carpenter with his father. In fact, he joined the local 41 Carpenters Union, which they mostly built acoustical ceilings. Well, a few years down the road, 2021, Boozer decided, you know what? Let's get back into it. He went on to pitch for an independent league team called the Chicago Dogs of the Atlantic League. And he refound his love for the game, and he pitched really, really well. So well that the Arizona Diamondbacks offered him a minor league deal. So he signed a contract with the Arizona Diamondbacks that next season, which was 2022, only to be released before the season ever ended. So more and more turmoil comes his way. He actually returns to indie ball with the Lancaster Barnstormers. Amazing name. Earned himself another MLB contract. This time, it was with the Boston Red Sox. 7 years after quitting baseball entirely, Cam Boozer made his MLB debut at 31 years old, where he picked up the final out of the Red Sox 8-1 victory over Pittsburgh in the third week of April. Incredible story. You think, okay, my dreams, they're just not happening. You never make it past single A. Like, it's one thing to make it to triple A and you just can't get over that hump. In fact, Boozer attempted to switch from a pitcher to a position player in single A when he was with the Twins a decade ago. That didn't end up working out for him either. So he had a plethora of injuries, including spine, labrum, Tommy John surgery. They tried switching him to a position player. They tried everything, and it just did not pan out for this kid. He goes back and becomes a blue-collar worker. He's working with his dad. He joins a carpenter's union. And then he all of a sudden decides, all right, let's get back into it. And at 31 years old, 10 years after he signed as an undrafted free agent, he finally makes his MLB debut with none other than the Boston Red Sox. And again, he collects the final out in their victory over Pittsburgh. Very, very cool story. You know, talk about just never giving up. I mean, I'm 27 years old. I'm going to be turning 28. Shoot, man. Give me a ball. Let's start the comeback now. No. I don't throw 96 like Cam Boozer, unfortunately, especially from the left-hand side. Okay. We'll stay in the American League East, but again, I mentioned how we're going to transition into a heavy dose of Baltimore Orioles this episode. How did the Baltimore Orioles rebuild a franchise through the MLB draft? Let's start in 2017. I think that's where the story starts to come to fruition for Baltimore. So, 2017, the Baltimore Orioles are coming off an American League wild card loss. That would be the last time they made the playoffs. That was 2016. The last time the Baltimore Orioles would make the playoffs for the next 5-6 seasons, depending on if you want to count that 2020 COVID condensed season. So for the next 5-6 seasons, Baltimore Orioles wound up being one of, if not the worst team in Major League Baseball. In 2017, Baltimore Orioles drafted a kid named D.L. Hall in the first round, a left-handed starting pitcher. Now, why is that important to the story? Well, D.L. Hall was used to trade for Corbin Burnes here in 2023, the now current ace of the Baltimore Orioles staff. So while D.L. Hall never wound up becoming the first round pick that maybe they hoped he would become in Baltimore, they used D.L. Hall to acquire the now ace Corbin Burnes. And all expectations are that the Baltimore Orioles are probably going to be in the stakes for extending Corbin Burnes long term when he becomes a free agent at the end of the season. So that was the 2017 draft. The 2018 draft, Grayson Rodriguez, first round pick, now the current Orioles number two starting pitcher, and he has the 6 best odds to win the Cy Young. Former top 10 MLB prospect just a year and a half, 2 years ago, now already the number two starting pitcher in that Baltimore Orioles rotation. That was 2018. Now another year goes by. The 2019 draft, now things get very, very interesting for Baltimore. And again, Baltimore is losing games. In 2017, they won 75 games. Not terrible, but not great. After that, 2018, they were the worst team in baseball. 47 and 115 was their record. That's a win percentage of 290. That's one of the worst winning percentages in Major League Baseball history for a single season. So coming off that 2018 disastrous of a season, now you have the 2019 MLB draft. And of course, when you lose more games, you get higher draft picks, which is exactly what happened with Baltimore. So now the 2019 draft comes alive, and this is where things get very, very fun. The Baltimore Orioles take Adley Rutschman, number one overall in the 2019 MLB draft. And I think we all know about Adley Rutschman at this point. Orioles starting catcher. He's already been an all-star. He's already been a silver slugger. Number 19th ranked player in baseball. I'm not talking prospects here, people. I'm talking in the preseason rankings for, according to MLB.com and MLB Network, he is the number 19th best player in Major League Baseball, according to MLB.com. That was the number one overall pick. Now, they hit on two picks that draft in their first two rounds. The second round, right after drafting Adley, the Baltimore Orioles went and got a kid named Gunnar Henderson in the second round. Gunnar Henderson, your 2023 American League Rookie of the Year. He's already won a Silver Slugger. He's already their starting shortstop. And he, speaking of MLB.com rankings, he's already at his age, I think he's 22 years old now, Gunnar Henderson is already the number 34 ranked player in Major League Baseball, according to MLB.com's preseason rankings. So in the 2019 draft, the Baltimore Orioles, in the first two rounds, were able to get the 19th best player in baseball and the 34th ranked player in baseball. And by the way, they're still young. Like, there's still room to grow. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Gunnar Henderson wound up being a top 10 player in Major League Baseball before his time ends. Same goes for Adley Rutschman. So that was the 2019 draft. Again, Orioles are still losing games because these prospects, DL Hall in 2017, Grayson Rodriguez in 2018, and now Adley and Gunnar, these guys are still in minor league ball. They have not yet made their MLB debuts yet. The Baltimore Orioles are still losing games. So fast forward to 2019, still one of the worst teams, in fact, the worst record in Major League Baseball, 54-108 was the Baltimore Orioles record. Meaning another high draft pick for the Orioles in the 2020 draft. 2020 draft was different because it was condensed. It was during the COVID pandemic, so there were fewer rounds, fewer players to choose from. 2020 draft, Baltimore Orioles selected a kid named Heston Kerstad in the first round. He is currently the number 30 overall MLB prospect, and he made his MLB debut last season. And Kerstad is now in the thick of their rotation. And I say rotation because they have so much depth within their starting lineup that that's kind of the situation that they have. They have a starting lineup, but then they also have some bench pieces because this team has so much depth. So Kerstad's getting more or less everyday at-bats at the big league level right now. That 2020 draft keeps going. First round competitive balance pick, which are the picks that come after the first 30 selections. A competitive balance pick has to do with it's picks given off the teams for players leaving free agency, star players typically. So the competitive balance first round pick that the Orioles had that season was a kid named Jordan Westberg, who is currently the Orioles starting third baseman and is a former top 100 MLB prospect. So that 2020 draft, Kerstad, Westberg, both in your starting lineup here in 2024. Fast forward one more year. They're still losing games. 52-110. Again, the worst record in Major League Baseball in 2021. So that 2021 MLB draft, they drafted a kid named Colton Cowser in the first round. I think we're starting to see a trend. First round draft pick hits. Rewind just a bit. 2017, DL Hall. 2018, Grayson Rodriguez. 2019, Adley and Gunnar. 2020, Kerstad and Westberg. Now 2021, you get Colton Cowser, who is now the Orioles' starting left fielder already after being drafted less than three seasons ago, and he's a top 50 MLB prospect. 2022, now you see things start to turn because now Adley Rutschman is up at the big league level. Now Gunnar Henderson. Now, Grayson Rodriguez, these kids, DL Hall, these kids are now at the big league level. And the Orioles, all of a sudden, start turning that corner. In 2022, the Baltimore Orioles went 83-79, surprising everybody after having the worst record in baseball in 2021. All of a sudden, they found themselves in the thick of the wild card race. And albeit they did not make the playoffs in 2022, they absolutely turned heads and set a new timeline for expectations. And in that 2022 season, the Baltimore Orioles drafted a kid named Jackson Holliday with the number one overall pick. Now, he was promoted to Major League Baseball already, less than 2 years after being drafted, at just 21 years old, just 2 weeks ago. He's now already the Baltimore Orioles starting second baseman. He is the number one overall Major League Baseball prospect at, excuse me, just 20 years old. Not 21 years old, 20 years old. He is the tied for the youngest player in Major League Baseball. Now, Holiday has had his struggles so far, and there's some questions of whether the Baltimore Orioles should option him down to AAA to have him get his confidence back. You don't want to have your number one overall prospect start to lose it mentally. So he's stumbled a bit out of the gates, Jackson Holiday has so far, but this is a kid that everybody, he's a number one overall pick, people. Okay, we're not going to see a career end over 2 weeks' time, 2 weeks of at-bats at the big league level. Give him some time. There's a reason he's the number one overall prospect in baseball, and it's not because he tears up AAA pitching. It's because he projects to be a good big league hitter. So let's rewind a little bit and then fast forward quickly, give you an idea one more time of the draft picks that the Baltimore Orioles selected. 2017, D.L. Hall. 2018, Grayson Rodriguez. 2019, Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson. 2020, Heston Kjerstad and Jordan Westberg. Colton Cowser in 2021, Jackson Holiday in 2022. By the way, there's some others mixed in the later rounds, such as Ryan Mountcastle, such as Austin Hayes. But the story I'm trying to tell is how the Baltimore Orioles rebuilt their franchise by hitting on every single one of their first and second round draft choices. And we're seeing that so far. So keep this in mind too, you know, we talk about how the Orioles were a bad, bad franchise for a 5 to 6 year span. After they made the playoffs in 2016, they went and missed the playoffs six straight seasons. And a lot of people would chalk this up as saying, well, the Baltimore Orioles, they just tanked. That's how they rebuilt their franchise, is they tanked every single year. They tried to lose ball games. They had one of, if not the lowest payroll in Major League Baseball. All of that's true. All of that is absolutely true. To throw a caveat in there, though, they're very good at it. The Orioles are very good at tanking. Look at what Colorado has done. Look at what the Angels have done. Look at what the Detroit Tigers have done over this last decade. We're talking longest playoff droughts in Major League Baseball. They had the same opportunity as the Baltimore Orioles had to tank, get high draft picks, hit on high draft picks, turn that corner and turn that franchise or its franchise into a winning one. Baltimore was able to do it in 5-6 years, which is not a short amount. Let me make this case. So their last playoff appearance was in 2016, Baltimore. They had a losing season at 75-87 in 2017. Not a good season, but you win 75 games, you're more or less you're trying to win ball games. After that, the wheels fell off. So 2018, 2019, 2020 was a COVID shortened season. For the sake of the argument, let's throw 2020 out the window. 2021, another bad season. 2022, they had a winning season, 83-79. So again, for the sake of argument, let's throw 2020 out the door. And then let's also throw 2017 out the door, because like I said, they won 75 games. They were at least trying to win ball games, and they were coming off a playoff appearance just a season ago. So you talk about timeline and how they were able to rebuild this franchise. Well, 2018, terrible season, worst record in baseball. 2019, much of the same. 2020 is thrown out the door. 2021, they won 52 games, another worst team in baseball season. And then they became a winning team the year after that. So everybody said, okay, they just tanked for a decade. They tanked for a decade, Danny. They had high draft picks for a decade. Of course, they were able to rebuild their franchise. Again, for the sake of the argument, throw away 2020, throw away 2017, a competitive team. They had three really, really bad seasons. Three. So a lot of people want to just chalk it up with, well, they were the worst team in baseball for a decade. No. They were the worst team in baseball for about 3-4 years. And they were able to take a team that made the playoffs in 2016 and then completely resurrect a franchise in 5 years, three really atrocious seasons, and they were able to hit on every single one of those draft picks that I've already named, starting in 2017 with DL Hall. Now, this is where it gets juicy. There's a lot of connection between the Baltimore Orioles of today and how the Houston Astros were able to resurrect their franchise back in the early 2010s. And it all has to do with Mike Elias, who is the current general manager of the Baltimore Orioles. Now, before he became the general manager of the Baltimore Orioles, he was the number three man to Jeff Luhnow in Houston. Back in 2012, Jeff Luhnow takes over as general manager of the Houston Astros. Mike Elias joins him as a special assistant and later became a scouting director shortly thereafter. So Jeff Luhnow is number one. Elias is number three. And by the way, David Stearns, who is now the general manager and president of baseball operations with the New York Mets, formerly with the Milwaukee Brewers, he was the assistant general manager. So you had a front office in Houston of Jeff Luhnow, David Stearns, Mike Elias. Pretty solid. So they take over before the 2012 season in Houston, and times are not good in Houston. People might forget this before the dynasty in the later 2010s, but Houston, one of the worst franchises in baseball at this juncture. Coming into the 2012 season, they had the worst record in Major League Baseball in 2011. 2012, which is that first season that Luhnow took over, they had the third lowest payroll in Major League Baseball. That's another key point there, because a lot of people look at the payrolls now. You look at what the Astros gave Altuve, what they gave, they haven't signed Bregman yet, but what they gave Yordan Alvarez. They're typically top 10 in payroll each and every season nowadays. That wasn't the case back in the early 2010s. Third lowest payroll in Major League Baseball that first season that Luhnow, Elias, Stearns took over. Now, they took over before the 2012 season. They ended up making the playoffs four seasons later in 2015. Now, why am I laying this all out there? Well, it mirrors very, very closely with how the Baltimore Orioles and Mike Elias was able to resurrect their franchise. So, again, at Houston Astros, 2012 was that first season with that new front office. They had the worst record in Major League Baseball the year prior. Well, Mike Elias took over the Baltimore Orioles before the 2019 season. He also inherited a ball club that had the worst record in Major League Baseball. They had the worst record in 2018. He took over before 2019. I said the Astros, when that front office took over, they were able to make the playoffs four seasons after the front office took over in 2012. Well, the Baltimore Orioles, Mike Elias took over in 2019. That franchise was able to make the playoffs five seasons later. Which, again, for the sake of the argument, if you want to throw away that 2020 COVID year, it would also be four seasons after Mike Elias was hired. Orioles made the playoffs. Four seasons in Houston, four plus the COVID season in Baltimore. That's the difference between playoffs. I mentioned payroll with Houston. Payroll has been a talking point with Baltimore as well. Well, third lowest payroll in Major League Baseball that first season that Luhnow, Elias, Stearns took over. Baltimore Orioles, guess what? They had the third lowest payroll in Major League Baseball the first season that Mike Elias took over. It's starting to get weird, right? With Houston, worst record in Major League Baseball. That's what that front office inherited. In Baltimore, worst record in Major League Baseball. That's what Mike Elias and that front office inherited. In Houston, third lowest payroll in Major League Baseball the first season. In Baltimore, third lowest payroll in Major League Baseball, Elias's first season. And finally, they made the playoffs 4 years after the front office took over in Houston. In Baltimore, they made the playoffs five seasons, including that COVID year after Mike Elias took over. Yeah, it's you're seeing the similarities between Baltimore, Houston. And by the way, talk about hitting on draft picks, international signings. I just talked about how Baltimore was able to successfully build their franchise through the draft. How about this? So this was 1 year before Luhnow, Elias, Stearns took over. The Houston Astros drafted George Springer first round in 2011. Now, One year later, this is when that new front office takes over. They draft Carlos Correa in 2012 and Lance McCullers right after that. They're able to sign Brian Abreu, who's their top relief arm, albeit not pitching right now, in 2013 as an international free agent. They draft Alex Bregman in the first round in 2015. They also draft Kyle Tucker in 2015. They sign Christian Javier to an international deal in 2015. They sign Jose Urquidy in 2015 to an international deal. They also, what a year 2015 was for the Astros. I kind of dropped the ball. They also signed Framber Valdez in 2015. So in 2015, between the draft and international signings, Bregman, Tucker, Christian Javier, Jose Urquidy, Framber Valdez. Yuli Gurriel, also international signee from Cuba in 2016. They didn't sign Yordan Alvarez as an international free agent. They actually acquired him from the Dodgers for Josh Fields, but this was before Yordan was Yordan. This was before Alvarez became a top prospect in baseball. They acquired him at the very low ranks of minor league, at the single A level, rookie ball, single ball, single A level. That was in 2016. And then in 2017, Houston Astros did it again, and they were able to sign Luis Garcia in 2017 as an international free agent. Again, Orioles are hitting on all of their draft picks. Houston Astros are hitting on all of their draft picks. It's similar. I mean, it's like a blueprint that Mike Elias is following, but it's his blueprint that he and David Stearns and Jeff Luhnow set when he was in Houston. They're doing the exact same thing. The timelines are very, very similar. Oh, and by the way, top 100 prospects, these are guys that are not yet on the Baltimore Orioles' current roster. I talked about international signings. Well, they signed a kid named Samuel Basayo, who is currently in Double A right now as an international free agent, and they've spent a pretty penny to get him, well over $1 million, which is quite a bit for international signing. Basayo is currently the number 16th ranked prospect in Major League Baseball. Kobe Mayo, number 27th ranked MLB prospect. And I already mentioned Heston Kerstad, Jackson Holliday. So they have four top 100 prospects, according to MLB.com. So let's just look at what the Baltimore Orioles were when Elias took over in that 2019, before that 2019 season. And keep in mind, Elias inherited the atrocious contract that Chris Davis was handed out. So he inherited a 150, 200. What was Chris Davis? Let's see. It had to have been well over 200, right? I'm sorry. It was 7 years, 161 million, but a lot of that was deferred. Like Chris Davis is still getting paid. But anyways, so Elias has to inherit the Chris Davis contract. Again, they had the worst record in Major League Baseball. Their pitching staff is just in shambles. So you look at 2019, that first season with Elias, it was Chris Davis, Jonathan Villar at second, Richie Martin at shortstop, Rio Ruiz at third base, Dwight Smith Jr. in left field, Stevie Wilkerson in center, Trey Mancini in right, good player, Renato Nunez at the designated hitter position. They also had guys like Anthony Santander on their roster, Hanser Alberto, DJ Stewart, Joey Rickard. Austin Hayes did make his MLB debut that season. Cedric Mullins, the same, but Mullins and Hayes were not getting everyday at-bats. They weren't yet big league players. Pitching-wise, this first season with Elias at the helm was Dylan Bundy, John Means, Andrew Cashner, David Hess, Aaron Brooks. Now you fast forward to 2024, just a few seasons after Elias takes over. Adley Rutschman at catcher, Ryan Mountcastle at first, Jackson Holliday at second, Gunnar Henderson at short, Jordan Westberg at third, Colton Cowser in left, Cedric Mullins in center, Anthony Santander in right field, and then they mix and match at the designated hitter position between Ryan O'Hearn, Heston Kerstad, and their AAA team is just obliterating other AAA teams. So this is not a franchise that has a super high payroll. In fact, they have one of the lowest payrolls in Major League Baseball and has had one of the lowest payrolls in Major League Baseball for the past 6-7 years. This is a team that did it through the draft, through international signings, and they did it from within. Yeah, they tanked. They absolutely tanked. But there's a lot of teams out there that had the same exact tanking opportunities that the Baltimore Orioles had, and they did not have nearly the hit or success rate that Baltimore did. Gunnar Henderson, just going through their lineup. Gunnar Henderson, drafted. Adley Rutschman, drafted. Ryan O'Hearn was purchased from the Kansas City Royals through DFAs. Anthony Santander, he was a Rule 5 guy, which means other teams completely gave up on him, and then they got Santander for cookies. Ryan Mountcastle, drafted. Cedric Mullins, drafted. Colton Cowser, drafted. Jordan Westberg, drafted. Jackson Holliday, drafted. Heston Kjerstad, drafted. I just went through their entire lineup. Not one of those players was signed to a major free agent contract. Starting rotation-wise, Corbin Burnes, he was acquired for DL Hall, who they drafted. Cole Irvin, they acquired, using some prospects to get him. Prospects that they drafted. After that, Albert Suarez, he was signed as a free agent. Grayson Rodriguez, drafted. Dean Kramer, he was acquired via trade with the Dodgers. Again, they used players that they drafted to acquire Dean Kramer. Kyle Bradish, he was via trade. John Means, drafted. I'm sounding like a broken record at this point. But the point is that this Baltimore Orioles franchise was able to, within a 3 to 4 year stretch, rebuild a completely different franchise. This Baltimore Orioles franchise was able to resurrect itself in about a 3 to 4 year span by hitting on every single one of their first and second round draft picks. Again, if you want to say they tanked to do it, that's fine. That's fine. They absolutely did. But just again, there's a lot of teams out there that couldn't do it. Mike Elias did. Mike Elias did it in Houston. Mike Elias is now doing it here in Baltimore. And we all know what happened in Houston. A few World Series titles, 6 American League Championship titles. Yeah, there's a scandal involved there. I'm not going to just browse over that one. But if Baltimore, and we've already seen them start on this trek, if Baltimore wants to follow the blueprint that Lunau, Elias, Stern set back in 2012, it's probably a good path to go down. Who knows? Maybe in 10 years, we could be looking at the Baltimore Orioles being the 2010s Houston Astros. And why not? I mean, you look at their current roster that I just laid out. I mean, they have a true chance. Willie said this on a previous podcast. Maybe it's a bit early, but when you look at contract-wise, you look at payroll flexibility of this new ownership group, there could be a window for the Baltimore Orioles to have a legitimate dynasty, or at least American League dynasty, if they follow that blueprint. And this is a lot of the reason why these guys aren't going to be hitting free agency, because these guys were all drafted and they're just now finally joining the big league club. They're just in the early stages of arbitration for most of them, guys like Adley and Gunnar. Let's look at when these guys are going to even hit free agency. Corbin Burnes, he's going to be a free agent after this year. Anthony Santander, going to be a free agent after this season, along with John Means. Cedric Mullins, Austin Hayes, those guys are going to be free agents. And Jorge Mateo, they'll be free agents after next season. I haven't even gotten to the core yet, other than Corbin Burnes. I haven't even gotten to their core yet, though. You have to go all the way past to the 2028 season before Adley Rutschman becomes a free agent. Dean Kramer becomes a free agent. A year after that, 2029, that's when Gunnar Henderson is a free agent. Kyle Bradish, Yennier Cano. One more year after that, now we're in 2030. Grayson Rodriguez, Jordan Westberg, Colton Cowser, Jackson Holliday. That's when those guys hit free agency. I mean, this team is, even if they don't extend them, let's say hypothetically Baltimore wants to continue to be a, quote, small market team. Ownership doesn't want to invest into the team. They don't want to extend Adley. They don't want to extend Gunnar, which I'm not expecting to happen, by the way. I do expect Baltimore to try and extend Burnes, Adley, Gunnar, that core. But let's say they don't. They're still going to have, with the exception of Corbin Burnes, they're still going to have that lineup locked in. Team control for the next 4 seasons minimum. Talk about championship window. That's how the Baltimore Orioles were able to go from disaster of a franchise, resurrect itself into now a championship window of 4 or 5. They start extending these guys, keep on going. The long championship window. And in American League East, that has the New York Yankees, Boston Red Sox, Toronto Blue Jays, Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, it's a tough division to be in, but they are now the talking point of Major League Baseball, and as they should be, because this is going to be a dominant, dominant franchise for the next years to come. This is a fun episode. I love breaking down teams like that because sometimes we skip over and don't see like the ins and outs of how things become. Instead, we just see how they are when they come out the other side. Well, to see how this team started, went through it, tanked again. Yes, they tanked. And then come out the other side to where they are now. Every team should aspire to follow that same route that the Houston Astros started, Baltimore Orioles are doing. Which team next is going to follow that blueprint? Detroit? Kansas City? Maybe dumb not to. Wake and Rake Podcast, people, appreciate you all joining in. Episode 116, all part of the Bleav Network. We'll talk soon, people. Peace.